out. Oh, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Minutes of the previous meeting.
For your signature, Chairman, please.
Agreed?
Yes, agreed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I will sign it.
Thanks, sir.
Are we all here?
No, thanks, sir.
We have apologies from Councillor Aspin, Chairman, who is substituted tonight by Councillor Roy James.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moves us quickly on to officers' reports. If you'd like, come and join us.
Apologies for those that have already had this update last week. So it is the same update. We've got a little bit more information towards the end. So,
okay.
With your permission, Chair, I'll go through the report.
Please.
Okay. So, the purpose of the note is to inform members on the progress of the completion of fire risk assessment for the Stafford portfolio of public and commercial buildings. Following a deep dive of compliance within the SBC corporate assets team in September 2024. It became clear that there were no fire risk assessments for the full portfolio of public or commercial buildings. In terms of a legal background, the regulatory reform order came into force in October 2006. It applies to almost all buildings except individual private homes. This includes workplaces, public buildings, shops, schools, hospitals, care homes and common area flats. The RRO aims to ensure the safety of people in non-domestic premises by making fire safety a proactive, ongoing responsibility for those in control of buildings. The key requirement of the order places certain duties on the responsible person, usually the employer, owner or person in control of the premises. The person responsible must ensure that a fire risk assessment is carried out to identify fire hazards, assess risks and implement measures to reduce or eliminate those risks. Based on the risk assessment, the appropriate fire safety measures must be put in place. These include fire detection and warning systems, e.g. fire alarms, safe escape routes and emergency exits, firefighting equipment such as fire extinguishers, emergency plans and evacuation procedures, training for staff and regular fire drills. We did complete regular fire drills, so despite having the not having fire risk assessments in place, regular fire drills have been carried out. We also need to give special consideration to the needs of vulnerable people. For example, those with disabilities may need to be considered to have a fire safety plan in place. These fire safety arrangements must be maintained, reviewed and updated regularly. Records of risk assessments and actions taken must be kept. So in terms of the progress to date, of the 30 SBC operational sites managed by the corporate assets team, all 30 now have a fire risk assessment. Recommendations from the reports were minimal and no dangerous issues or urgent actions highlighted. All remedial actions have either been completed or are in hand. In terms of the commercial properties, those are the properties that are leased. 29 tenants have been contacted to request they submit details for their compliance related matters, including fire risk assessments. The remaining 31 were contacted on the 23rd of September 2025. Of the 29 tenants already contacted, 15 have provided fire risk assessments, and to confirm, Freedom Leisure have provided reports for all of the sites that they manage on our behalf, including the Gatehouse Theatre, Stafford and Stone Leisure Centres, Rowley Park, Stafford Castle, the Ancient Eye House and Isaac Walton Cottage. So a live register is being held by a corporate assets team to log responses and highlight outstanding information. In terms of the assessments, recommendations from the surveys varied, but more importantly, no deficiencies were identified within any of the surveys that would materially affect the safety of the building users or compromise evacuation procedures in the event of fire. So in terms of the examples, I find them some of the two biggest and busiest buildings that we operate from. I can run through the action plan for the Civic Centre. So there were 9 actions that were identified, and we were asked to review the storage in the loading bay and rear corridor to ensure that the exit routes are not obstructed or and can be used at all times. That action was completed on the 1st of August. Ensure that tenants undertake fire risk assessments of their areas and undertakings. So we've requested that information from the other occupiers of the building. Review the use of lobbies leading to escape stair in block A block, and ensure these areas are kept clear at all times. That was completed on the 22nd of July. Consider introducing a hot work permit system to control any hot works. That action is ongoing and due for completion in October 2025. Review the storage of waste bins and consider relocating them from outside of the building. That's being monitored. Remove trip hazards from the route from the exit door from development and planning. That was completed on the 29th of August. Remove the plank and brick from the foot of the escape stairs. That's been completed in July. And consider reviewing the fire compartmentation, separating the central core and escape stairs. That survey has been booked in and should be completed shortly. In terms of Stafford Crematorium, the fire risk assessment was reviewed, and the actions that were highlighted there were 7 actions, quite low level actions. Rehang the inward opening single leaf exit door to open outwards, that was completed in August. Replace the locks on the exit door so that easily open, that was completed in August. Ensure extension leads adapters are not used for multiple high power appliances such as kettles, toasters. Ideally high power items should be plugged into individual wall sockets, and that's been that is ongoing and is being monitored. Review the storage of fuel within the grounds maintenance store, that was completed in June. Consider installing emergency lighting in the chapel to illuminate the exits, that's been completed. Confirm that the fire safety systems are tested, maintained, and there is as required and records are kept. That is now being done. And confirm that all staff undertake induction and refresher training, and fire drills are undertaken. So that's in hand. So moving forward, as a result of the surveys, there's only the Civic Centre that requires a compartmentation survey, and this is booked in for the 13th and 14th of October. In terms of the next steps for the operational portfolio, reviews will be completed annually. The corporate assets team centrally hold a compliance register which has been updated with relevant information, and all remedial works will be completed by the end of October. For commercial tenanted premises, all compliance information we've requested that is submitted by the 10th of October. Should the information fail to be submitted, we will write to tenants again. However, it is important to note that while tenants have an obligation to protect visitors and staff premises in the premises that they manage, they are not actually legally required to provide this information to the landlord unless the lease specifically states that, which ours do not. So once the information has been received from our tenants, we will update our records. And moving forward, we are required to carry out fire risk assessments on a 2-yearly basis, and that is now programmed in, and we won't fall behind on this action.
Can I request that we acknowledge the receipt of the report?
Can I ask you, Chair, can I ask a question? You've got the staff and everything else that's trained. What about members? Is there any legal requirement that members know where the fire routes are and so on?
I would assume, I'm looking, because on me, I think, or in front of me, as part of your member induction that you have when you're appointed, I'm assuming that you have an induction of the Civic Centre and a fire evacuation.
No, we don't do things like that.
No. I don't actually know what to do in the middle of a meeting.
Sorry, Judith, I think has got some useful comment here.
Chair, whilst there isn't an induction to the Civic Centre as such, I do run a health and safety one which does touch in passing on evacuation. It's not the primary focus of it, it's more concerned with members' health and safety when they're out doing their constituency stuff, but I do touch on that as part of it.
I'd forgotten I'd forgotten that one, Judy, thank you.
I would think, Chair, if there was a meeting and there was a fire alarm, there would be a mad scramble for that door.
Mm-hmm. One of us would be the
senior
Yes, one of us
would
actually be
the fire
manager.
You would be,
because
he's
the
most senior
person here.
I would say you
would. Well, would you?
I've been minuted,
Mr. Chair. Yeah, I don't miss that one. The Deputy Chief Executive is going to save us all.
Like this evening, and you're not normally here. How would we?
Make sure you get a badge on the way.
Chair, can I just ask?
Yep.
About the leases, they don't have to put a fire safety plan. Is that important that they haven't got one? I mean, should we think about changing the leases, or for all new leases, put it in as a requirement?
We can consider incorporating that as a new clause in any new leases that are.
I think that would be good protection for us.
Yeah.
And good practice as well.
Yeah. I think that would be an action that would need to go back to Ian Collins, head of legal, because he's responsible for that function.
Could you change existing leases as well?
I'm sorry?
Could you change existing leases or not?
Probably you couldn't enforce, but I think it might be worth a polite request. From existing lessees.
Through you, Chair, our obligations are to make the operators of those premises aware of what their obligations are.
Yeah. So,
are we responsible for the other tenants in the building as well?
No, we've asked them for their fire risk assessment.
They do their own. Yeah. And the other thing is contractors who are coming on site. There is a document,
how many induction. We're in the process of asking them for their compliance information as well as part of this deep dive into compliance.
Okay, sure. Well, are they all coordinated, the people in this building, so we all go the same way as like the clinic and things like that? Is that sort of organised, so we all go the same places?
Through you, Chair. We had a fire drill recently, 2 weeks ago, and the building was evacuated within 4.5 minutes, and there were no issues, and our partners were open to the public, so that was quite good that evacuation drill went well.
Is that the first one we've done for a while?
No, actually we do them every 6 months, we do 2 a year.
Right.
But not during evening committee meetings.
That's why I'd not noticed.
Yeah.
Good. That's something I didn't know.
Chairman, I wonder if we can have a fire drill at some point when the councillors are in the building, perhaps in a committee meeting, so that they can take part in the fire drill.
Are you suggesting we have one now? And we all leave?
No.
As long as you come back.
Simulated one, no. But I mean, if we could have a fire drill when they're in the committee meeting, I mean, that could be what actually happens in reality.
Yeah.
It could be any time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm in it in that.
The other thing, of course, is that, you know, when we as a council meet in the county buildings, so, you know, do we know where the fire escapes are there?
Well,
we might know where they are here, but.
Yeah.
It's a green label. It says fire exit.
Oh, right, okay.
all around.
When you go to a lot of meetings, the hosts are sort of going through the fire exits, don't they? And at the beginning, they'll sort of say,
they often do. Yeah.
You go out that way, you do this, and you'll meet on this point on the car park. Yeah.
You think that's part of corporate services function?
Mm, I would think so, yes. Air stewardess.
The beginning of the meeting tells us where the overwing accesses are.
It's not
any other questions? No? Thank you very much for your report. And we're updating the strategic risk register and all the many things that have changed on it.
Thank you, Chair. So the risk register up to the end of June, there aren't any changes in the total number of risks and there aren't any changes in the residual risk scores. However, there are a couple of points I'd like to draw to members' attention, which is set out in 5.10. So the most important one of those is we've actually changed the target score for the risk that concerns capacity. That was originally set at 8, but we've now reverted back to the target score of 12 on that, which is the same as its current residual risk score, based on the fact that there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment in terms of local government reorganisation. We are struggling to recruit key professionals, and we don't really see that improving in the next sort of 12 months or so. So we will still take actions to manage that risk, but it's more about managing it at the existing level rather than with any real expectation that we'll reduce that risk further. I've reworked the action plan for the risk that's around local government reorganisation to kind of reflect how that has changed. And that really reflects the appointment of the consultants who've been helping to develop the business case for us. And then the other change was just a change to an implementation date for one of the actions in Risk 16. So those are the only things that I really wanted to draw to my attention. I wouldn't get too alarmed that there hasn't really been any change in risk scores at this point. As I say, given the nature of the risks, they are all high level, they are all, you know, they are high as strategic risks. It will take time for some of those other ones to see any movement. We are delivering the actions, but they'll take time to take effect.
Roy.
Judith, can I ask what's happening about the local government reorganisation? It's now, or tomorrow will be the 1st of October. We've got less than 9 weeks in which to produce something. I understand that various authorities are not exactly joining in with us, so the so-called six is now probably only three, unless my maths is wrong. When are we going to get a briefing? One, and two, when are the parish councils going to get a briefing?
Strictly speaking, it's within the remit of this committee, and the resources scrutiny committee has got oversight of that, aside from obviously the cabinet. But I can brief that meetings are in the process of being arranged. I think it's a full council meeting for early November. There is an anticipation that we're going to try and squeeze the members' briefing in before then as well, if we can. And there is still some talk about whether we might be able to host a meeting for the parishes as well. But there's still quite a bit of work to be done before we can get to that point. We don't have a final report at the moment, so that's where attention is currently being focused, is actually on finalising the report that will come to council for consideration. And there's still ongoing discussions with the consultants who've been working with us on that.
And the consultants have been appointed?
Yes, the consultants have been appointed. As I say, they're nearing the end of their piece of work. They produced a draft and we're working through that with them to put the technical accuracy that need confirming, changing, and then we're working our way through. But it is quite a long report, so.
Okay.
And pleased to note that we've examined at the risk of our failure to deliver good governance and decided we can reduce the target score to 4. A big step forward.
I'll say there are a number of actions that are associated with that that are still to be delivered.
Yeah.
Yes, but I wouldn't want the committee to think that we weren't aiming for the best on that one.
In the circumstances, Judith, I think you're doing very well. Any other comments? We're asked to note the rest. Strategic risk register. Thank you.
Yep, got it. Yep, page 21.
Page 21, we start for the next. And that moves us on to updates.
The improvement plan, Chairman.
The improvement plan.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
Got it, yeah.
So that's page 21, the improvement plan. Who's doing the improvement plan, Judith? It's you're still on this one?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So this updates us to progress as at the end of June, and members will see there has been a little bit of slowing in our progress on this. We are still continuing to make progress, but it's a little pace of that and slowed a little bit. So we delivered just either have delivered in full or are on target to deliver just under 50% of the actions, and then the ones that have slipped. Now that is largely down to capacity and the fact that we have been, that's when work on local government reorganisation started. I will put a marker down now, I expect this position to be similar in quarter two as well, because as I say, it's largely been myself and the Section 151 officer who've been involved in that, and we're also inextricably linked with a number of the actions within this. In terms of those ones that have slipped, I'm not going to go through all of them, but I thought I'd just talk through very quickly the four that have slipped by more than 3 months. So the first one of those is the budget monitoring reports, and unfortunately we still are not in a position to be able to do those regularly as we would like. We've been doing them intermittently for key milestones, but I say we're not yet in a position to produce those quarterly or monthly. The other one from the finance side of things that we haven't yet done is the lessons learned exercise from the implementation of the finance system. We do still want to do that, and that has been rescheduled for quarter three. One of the other actions is the piece of work we were planning to do around our culture and values, because that links in with another number of other key policies. There is a big question mark now over whether we will proceed with that piece of work or not. If you do, it's likely to be a much lighter touch than we'd originally planned. And then last but not least, the other one that's going to be across is the work on the contracts register. Now that one, work has now started on that one. I reported that it would start, it would be slipped, and it would be completed in quarter two. It won't be completed, but work is well underway with that one now. So at least that's one out of the four that we've seen some movement. I say I wasn't going to go through the other ones, but I'm happy to answer any questions that members have.
Sorry, Chair. With the culture and values piece of work, what will be the decision point at which there's going to be a decision made on it? Is there a timeline for yes, we are going to do this, no, we're not, or a refactoring of what that looks like?
It's not so much a specific timeline, it's more as doing a bit of an assessment around the other pieces of work that need to be done on whether that actually does stand any merit. Originally, the expectation was we do that as part of our shared services agenda, bringing us all together as the workforce. That's not going to happen in the way we originally planned. But there are still some other pieces of work around hybrid working that would lend itself to having some reference in there to culture and values. So it's now more about trying to look at where the other links are and do we need to do it. And if we do, could we do it as a smaller piece of work? So that's a bit I'm currently working through with the HR manager to see what we think, and then it would be through discussion with the leadership team.
Okay. Well, thank you, Judith. No doubt all of these will become clearer as we progress into the whatever new environment we finish up in.
Yeah, it is quite tricky at the moment. We are still, everything we thought we knew isn't perhaps unwrapping quite as we anticipated.
Yeah.
So we're having to adapt as we go along, which was why on the RIDS one I had to change the actions around LGR, because how we handled that wasn't what we were originally thinking. So there are still parts of this that are moving, but we are continuing to sort of kind of anticipate where we can and react where we need to.
Right, well, thank you very much for your hard work in trying to get us to where we wanted to go to.
To note progress, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you.
Page 36 now, Chairman.
Page 36. Updated internal audit charter.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll take members through this. So this report covers three key documents for internal audit, two of which are predominantly updates of documents that have come before, which is the audit charter and the quality assurance improvement framework for internal audit. So those two things. The charter is quite a high-level document that sets out a number of key responsibilities of internal audit, as well as things like our relationship with management, with members, how we report, what we will do. So it's really like a standing document that says this is the high level framework to which we will operate. The internal audit strategy is a new requirement this year that's come in with the revised global internal audit standards, and it's required us to produce a strategy document. This was probably implicit within the charter and within things like the audit plan that we brought before members traditionally, but we have now pulled it out into a separate document. That document is on page 58 and 59 of the agenda. We've tried to keep it quite high level, quite summary, because, as I say, it brings together a number of areas outside that are already in existing documents. And what we've tried to do with the strategy is to give a statement of where we think we're at the moment, what the team's strengths are, what the weaknesses may be, opportunities for us, and threats that may be affecting the function. We also set out the risk register for internal audit and things that we think may stop us delivering what we need to do. And then probably key is that audit themes at the bottom of page 58 on the document, which is the areas that we are going to try and focus the internal audit plan on over the next sort of 3 years or so. We didn't want to go any further for that because obviously things may change, but also where we're at with local government reorganisation, that may be a time for a bigger review anyway in terms of where we're at for the organisation. And then the quality assurance and improvement programme is, as it says, it's all about how we make sure the work that we do is of a sufficient standard, how we do quality reviews on our work, how we do the internal audit, the annual internal review that comes to this committee as part of the annual report, and then also the external review that we're required to have every 5 years. In terms of that, as I say, those, the first and the last of those documents are just updates in line with the new standards. A few words have changed, but nothing significant has really changed in the content. And then we have that strategy document, which is due. But I'm happy to take any questions on any detail from members on that, Chair.
Could I suggest, from a comment I had earlier, where we're getting an overview document presented to us for us to follow, it would be quite useful if we could see what has been changed. Because obviously, unless you know the documents in detail, it's a bit difficult to find out where you've come from and where you're going to. So if we could do that in future.
Okay. Yes, Chair, that's fine. In terms of the summary, Chair, I can say that the charter, the majority of the changes are updating the references to the public sector internal audit standards that we used to follow to the global internal audit standards. So it is predominantly that level of update. But I will take that on board, Chair.
And could I ask who oversees the internal audit strategy that you've produced here before it comes to this committee?
So,
who are you giving it to before?
To you, Chair. I will have agreed that predominantly with Judith, but it has also been presented to leadership team of the council, so they have seen it before it's come here. But essentially, it's through Judith and Chris who ultimately has the arrangements for making sure we have an internal audit section as Section 151 officer and Judith as the line manager.
So this has already been presented to Cabinet?
These documents, Chair, don't go to Cabinet. They are for Audit Committee and leadership team.
So this is as far as it goes
coming
here. Okay. So perhaps we could concentrate on that one, and if we've got any comments on whether we think the strategy is good, bad or indifferent, or do we all find it exactly as we'd expect it to be?
It is as it is, Mr. Chairman. I'm quite happy to accept it. Very comprehensive.
Right, so going back to what we're supposed to do here.
So it's approved the update and note contents, Mr. Chairman.
So if we, that being the most important document in there, which is the strategy for the coming year, coming 3 years, do we key documents operators requested we approve the update and we note the contents of the updated quality assurance program and the internal audit strategy?
Okay. So done, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Chairman, page 69. Oh, I missed one out, sorry.
I think we might have gone.
No, we're right. No,
nope. So we're on page 69. This is information, a progress report on the work up to 31st of August 25.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll take this one again. So this is the standard update report that we bring through to members of the committee on the work that's been done. This update takes us from the 1st of April, so the start of the year, through to the 31st of August, and really gives the summary of the internal audit work. As members can see, with the exception of one piece of work, which isn't a full audit, which is the work we do for the County Council on the Disabled Facilities Grants, all other audits that have been produced in the quarter, we've given partial assurance on those areas. So things aren't really bad, but there are improvements for those areas that we have recommended are done. And there's a summary of those on at Appendix 2, starting on page 74. And there's a brief explanation for each one of those as to what the key outstanding areas are. There isn't anything in there that I would specifically draw members' attention to for any of those, but I am happy to take questions on those. As normal with the rest of the report, we give a summary of the other work that we've started but not completed. And then there is an appendix for a summary of the follow-ups. Probably key for those, that's on page 80. Key for those are probably the first few, where we haven't been able to revise the assurance. Whilst there may be some work in progress, the assurance is on those first five, I think it is, or remaining partial. Some of those are just a matter of time. They are working in the right direction, but there are things holding them up. So, for example, the tree management, until we really get a true system implemented and get the records on there, that is unlikely to change the issue significantly. Until with pest and dog control, unless we let those contracts, until we let those, we're not going to move them forward. And the same for the others. There isn't anything where I think there are significant delays holding us up from and work not being done as quickly as that, then as officers should be on those people. It is pleasing to note that there are a few that have now been reissued substantial assurance because they have implemented a significant number of the findings, or with one, the climate change, we've actually re-looked at the recommendation and reassessed the risk of that because of other changes. In terms of that report, I'm not going to draw anything else for members' attention, but as I say, I'm quite happy to take members' questions on any of the contents of the report.
Would members like to go through page by page? Or just do we have any particular questions?
Oh, I've got a question on page 77. I don't mind going through the order.
Let's go through page by page and we'll pick them up. So, starting appendix 2, page 74, sundry debtors, then development management receipt of applications, development managed determinations, Sorry, Angela, you were saying?
Sorry, on page 76, the second point down to the authorisation identity card needed to be updated, not identified card.
Sorry, apologies, Chair. Yes, that is correct.
Should that be identity cards? Cards.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Roy, you what are the question on page 75?
Yeah, sorry, I was going to ask, does the applications determined after the required time scale, the extensions of time approvals from the applicant, is there any progress on that or not?
If I may through you, Jack, I can't comment on progress that's been made since we did the audit. We haven't followed that up yet to see. We have had the management comments for the report where they are looking to put arrangements in place to make sure that that is done. In terms of what I can say from the management comments, there weren't any challenges to any of those decisions being taken longer without the extension of time. So it is where we don't make a decision in time, the applicant can challenge us on that basis. These haven't been done. There haven't been any challenges for those that we did pick up. But obviously, it is a requirement that where we are out of the time or likely to not make the decision in time, that we should get the applicant's permission to take longer in terms of the legislation.
Any other questions on page 76?
Are any of the problems as a result of lack of staff?
In terms of the food safety arrangements, I can't comment directly, that would be for managers to say. I don't believe any of these are purely down to lack of staff or not having the staff. I think it is a matter of making sure we have the right arrangements in place, the timescales. As I say, I can't offer a view either way in terms of the lack of staff. I'm not fully aware of their staffing structures at this time and whether they have had vacancies. Chair.
Page 77.
Okay, it's just on the civil contingencies. I was just a bit worried because there's all these talk these days about already being at war with Russia and all these cyber attacks like and knocking Jaguar Land Rover out of Marks and Spencer's. I just wonder whether that fitted in there with the fact that the business continuity plan, hasn't been finalised. And also I was thinking of climate change and the risk of flooding. there's things down there like the rest centre, volunteer contacts and locations should be reviewed, and the rest centre plans. So just thought of the current sort of environment with climate change and some of those risks, and also possible trouble with Russia and, you know, disruption, misinformation is another one that they could do. So I just thought maybe because we've had peace and no problems for such a long while, that's all slipped a bit.
If I may, Chair, to comment on some of those, and I don't know whether you may want to comment on one bit around the IT side, but we have done separate work on IT business continuity arrangements, and we have separate IT business continuity plans. We have some disaster recovery arrangements, and we do have virus protection and other things that we do put in place for IT specifically. So this civil contingencies audit is wider than that. It's a mixture of our emergency planning preparations and the council's main operational business continuity arrangements. So we have a separate, and we have looked at separately the IT business continuity arrangements, which are fairly robust in their own right. But it's how we go about some of the other things in terms of, if we lost this building, what would we do, that we need to probably get that up to a better standard and improve some of those things. But also, it's about some of our the wider civil contingencies. So if we had a major event, as you say, whether that's flooding, whether that's a terrorist incident, where we step in as a Category 1 responder, we haven't done a lot of training ourselves in setting that up, so and doing exercises, whether that's we lost this building, what would we do? We could do a desktop exercise for that, or actually put some situations in place. We have, as an authority, taken part in some of the county-wide CCU, Civil Contingencies Unit exercises, multi-agency exercises, and we've done tests of some things, but there were other areas at our level where it was just affecting us that we perhaps need to do that, and that's the situation we're in.
Do I have a memory of that we did have a flooding incident in the building some years ago when the river overflowed?
If I may, Chair, I'm not entirely sure that we did flood. I think I think it was before my time, but I think the flood water got very close and the front doors were taken out of action, but we didn't actually flood. Right. But it came very close, so it would be arrangements for that.
There was a plan to how we would continue to operate the Revesham Bend Revenue and Benefits Department. Mm. I think is from memory.
I think
Judith obviously remembers
of this was Judith's area prior to the last restructure.
Whilst some of the plans themselves may not be in the state we want, in reality, because we share services and we have a shared IT infrastructure, we can move some of our operations to Canif if we needed to, and vice versa.
Right.
So, and that was always the plan. If ever this building was taken out of action for a reason, then we certainly operate our back office functions from Canif. We can still find somewhere else for a front end for customer. But the plans do need updating, refreshing, and what have you. So.
Perhaps in our new organisation that's coming up shortly, we will be able to reset all of that.
It's one of the things that actually it will probably be easier in one way because we'll have more capacity, and actually it will streamline, because at the moment with the two-tier system of local government there's always a bit of tension between what the borough's role is, what the county council's role is, so if we'd eliminate that, we'd all be working together as a group of partners.
Yeah.
We actually potentially take some of the resilience out of it.
Yeah. Okay, that's good to know. Roy first. Sorry.
I was going to ask who is actually updating the emergency plan specifically. Who?
So, if I may, Chair, the head of regulatory services has responsibility for the council's arrangements now, but we also have an officer who works for. We've got a service manager, and then we have an officer we buy in from the civil contingencies unit. I'm not sure how many days a week, but they come in with their expertise to help both councils write plans and to make sure we are joined up. So as Judith mentioned there, we can have joined up arrangements and plans and resilience within each other because of the shared services we have between the two councils.
So outside contractors doing it?
I believe it is a contractual arrangement with the sort of contingencies you need to buy in that expertise, but it is overseen by a service manager at the council, and then the head of regulatory services has that overall arrangement. But obviously with things like this, it is partly cross-cutting with other heads and managers to do their bits as well.
Just going back to the rest centres, I was thinking of flooding, not just this building, but if you have to evacuate a lot of people in Stafford because it's flooding, or say the M6 got blocked for a considerable amount of time, you might have to put up with a lot of stranded motorists. So is that our responsibility or the county council?
It is our council's responsibility as the primary for rest centres. That is one in the legislation. I think it does fall on the lower tier where we're in a two-tier responsibility.
There's a further complication as well. If it were to be an incident on the motorway, there's part of that that's shared with Hatmouth, England, whatever they're called these days. We have some responsibilities, but again, we have to be careful because our staff aren't necessarily trained to go onto motorways. But if they decant them off, then they become as the same if there's a major rail incident as well. It could be more to the council for just mentioning. There has actually been an exercise today, it was the county council's exercise. But some of our rest centre staff have been taking part in the exercise. Some of you might have seen it, because I think there was some fire engines and what have you outside of the county council's HQ today.
We used to have an emergency planning committee years ago, and they used to meet with, the committee used to have meetings with the emergency planning departments of the county council, the fire and rescue service and so on, and the room next door was laid out with as a communication centre and all that sort of thing. Which committee of the council deals with that now? Is it resources or? It used to be quite an important committee.
From memory, Jack, I think it does fall under resources. I have to double check the terms of reference, but it's very logically.
Yeah, so I think so.
And that room is still the one that's designated for the same
function.
And then the IT services, perhaps very popular at the moment with all the amount of hacking that's going on. Who has the responsibility of making sure that the transformation take place here, Judy?
The IT team fall within my area. We've not long updated our IT security policy and the arrangements, so that is something that's constantly kept under review. And I think with all of these high profile ones, I know I have a very nervous technology manager about what if it was a crap towards, and that's a thing. We can never give you a cast iron guarantee. It won't. So as much as we do, there are always people out there that are going to have the time interest in what's on the
gap. So if we were to be hacked and our records scrambled, who would be responsible for doing the backup and getting us back up to functioning?
The IT team would be a large part of that, but inevitably we probably convene our emergency planning arrangements. There is support available nationally through the police, the cyber units, they support organisations with that as well.
And we have got a cyber insurance policy as well, which we can call on for support.
We're doing better than JLR then.
So we take regular backups and take it off site, do we?
Yes.
Any other questions? So, what are we doing here?
Page 69, Chairman.
Page 69.
Two, note the report.
We are.
So noted, Mr. Chairman.
there we go. And is that us done?
That's us done.
Well, thank you very much.